Blog Talk Radio.
The worst deficit comes from a recession. And if we can take the proper action in the proper time, this can be the most important step we could take to prevent another recession. That is the right kind of a tax cut, both for your family budget and the national budget, resulting from a permanent basic reform and reduction in our rate structure, a creative tax cut, creating more jobs and income, and eventually more revenue. And the right time for that kind of bill, it now appears, in the absence of an economic crisis today, and if the job is done in a responsible way, is January 1963. Such a bill will be presented to the Congress for action next year. It will include an across-the-board, top-to-bottom cut in both personal income taxes. It will include long-needed tax reform that logic and equity demand. And it will date that cut in taxes to take effect as of the start of next year, January 1963. The billions of dollars this bill will place in the hands of the consumer and our businessmen will have both immediate and permanent benefits to our economy. Every dollar released from taxation that is spent or invested will help create a new job and a new salary. And these new jobs and new salaries can create other jobs and other salaries and more customers and more growth for an expanding American economy. Instead of being permanently saddled with excess planned capacity and the budgetary deficit that is created by this means, there must be full capacity and full employment and resources that that kind of employment and capacity can produce.
Welcome to Six Semper Tyrannis News. I'm your host, Mark Matheny, and today is the 27th of December. You were just listening to John F. Kennedy talking about tax cuts and the benefits of those things and the and so on. And recently the House and Senate passed the tax cut bill that has been put into place and brought forth by the Trump administration. And of course, you know, there's the Republican side who are praising the bill and the Democrat side that are damning the bill and calling it an economic Armageddon and so on. So who do you believe? You know, that you believe depends on what your outlook is. If you believe that President Trump is a Nazi and the great Satan and racist and all these things, then you believe that the tax cuts are only for the wealthy and not for the poor and so on. So, and if you're a Republican, then, you know, it's the greatest thing since God made little green apples. But what's the truth? And what can you believe? That's the question. Recently in the news on CNBC, Janet Yellen, who's the Federal Reserve Chairman, stated that basically tax reform is helping to boost economic growth. The tax reform plan in Congress helped push the Federal Reserve to raise its growth expectations for next year, but the tax reform plan wasn't the only factor in that. According to Federal Chair Janet Yellen, when she had a meeting on Wednesday, she talked about this. She spoke orders following the week's Federal Open Market Committee policy meeting, and she said that the current bill's move to cut corporate and personal tax rates will be positive for U.S. domestic growth, the gross domestic product, as she's talking about. The Fed boosted its estimate for 2008 GDP from 2.1% in September up to 2.5% at this week's meeting. Now, before I get into some of this, the reason I want to talk a little bit about this is because, you know, you have so many different viewpoints and you hear people saying one thing or the other, and I'll talk a little bit about the current economy and, you know, who can that be contributed to? Can it be contributed to Obama or neither one? Parts of both. That's the question. And the reason I want to go over that, my main thing is I've always talked about on the show the push for world government. And that's my main concern. The destruction of national sovereignty, the implementation of technocracy by elites, by by transnational corporations and secret societies and think tank groups, the United Nations, the World Bank, the Bank of International Settlements, and so on, International Monetary Fund. What's the purpose of these things? And so I'm talking about that. I'm going to get into a little bit of all of that. We can look at through all this and cut through some of this ambiguity. But Janet Yellen, during her final news conference, as the Fed chair said, "My colleagues and I are in line with the general expectation among most economists that the type of tax changes that are likely to be enacted would tend to provide some modest lift to GDP growth in the coming years." She said, however, that other factors are in play as well, and she noted that committee members have been factoring in tax reform to their GDP projections all year, so the latest boost shouldn't be read as driven wholly by the tax cuts. But people can't say that the tax cuts have there's a lot of factors, she said, that affects those projections and changes in tax policy. That's only one of a number of factors, including incoming data that is to some extent also the outlook for growth and inflation rate, she added. The FOMC decided to hike the Fed's target rate a quarter point to a range of 1.25% from 1.25% to 1.5%. And she said expectations for growth, particularly in the labor market, factored into the Fed's decision to increase the target range. So essentially the projected rate of GDP, she's saying at least is in part due to the tax cuts. So, you know, for those who are saying that these tax cuts, well, they don't appear to be if the product grows. And if you got projection rates coming from the Federal Reserve stating that, but you're still going to have the naysayers saying that these are totally worthless, deadly, that they're dangerous. As Janet Yellen said, you know, the sky's fallen, called it death and economic Armageddon and so on. But at the same time, you know, it is projection for growth. And so, you know, you can't just say that it's all bad. But, you know, there's always good and bad to everything. You know, you always have good points and bad points. If the tax plan can simplify the tax code, cut through a lot of ineffective and insufficient provisions, that will help. And also in that tax plan, they're going to double the size of the standard deduction, which is going to cut in half the number of taxpayers who actually need to itemize their deductions. And in addition, condensed rate structures, which collapse seven rates into four, also simplifies the tax code. And that's according to the Heritage Foundation. drastically lower rates for corporations, lower to moderate income individuals and families. Business tax reforms will provide a huge boost to the economy and to its workers. But now, if you are out there and you don't, you're saying that the current economy, due to Obama and his policies, and you're stating that we're now starting to partially reap the benefits of Obama's policies, which are now, you know, which drive the economy, which is what I hear from a lot of people and from a lot of news agencies. If that's the case, let's say, and, you know, I'm not going to debate it. If that's the case, then you'll have to then be at least open-minded to see President Trump's policies are going to lead us. And in part, Janet Yellen has already said the expectation of the tax reform helped to at least in part boost the economy. A lot of these corporations and a lot of these companies were new, have known for a while, based on Trump's campaign promises and his platform, what he was planning to do. In anticipation of this, the economic started to prosper from that outlook. So you have to at least understand that. And so, you know, you've been listening to the news, and of course, obviously, in the mainstream media on the Democrat side, you know, they're going to say that everything Trump is doing is just dangerous and bad policy that's going to wreck the country and so on. On the other hand, if you go on to, you know, right-leaning networks, Fox News and all these things, everything that President Trump is doing is just the greatest thing, you know, the wheel. So obviously, if we're realists, and even myself, we have a realization that it's probably going to be somewhere in between that, not necessarily one or the other, and that in part both sides are, and in part both sides are partly wrong, because we have to face the fact that, you know, on the research that I've done, President Trump has come into a somewhat stable economy. And we know that when President Obama came into the White House, he came in during the collapse, which I believe was a controlled collapse. That's a whole nother thing. But, you know, I believe that if you look under Bush Senior, you had in 2000, plus you had a good economy, great economy, and then you had 2007, but I think it was a controlled collapse. In other words, you had a great economy, then you had 2001, September 11th, at the United States, and I believe the economy was great in 2000. I believe that these elites got the economy in order and got the service so that when the attacks hit, they could have a good war chest of Congress and the people, the American people, to go to war. And then shortly, you know, attacks and the invasions of these different countries, especially Iraq, then 2007, you see this, well, you've seen a lot of shenanigans in the market before that, a lot of pumping up of the stock market, the housing market, and everything else, and then a big collapse, which if you ever read the book Creature of Jekyll Island, the Federal Reserve, basically private conglomeration of banking elites, they use booms and busts to consolidate their power and to keep their power. So 2007 hits, they call for this big stimulus package. Well, they say it's because of an economic recession. But really, when they started to do all the investigations, it was really about a lot of fraud and mismanagement and corruption and banks gambling the people's money, essentially. And so then they call upon the people to bail banks, not to prosecute people, not to prosecute banks down that were not conducting business properly, but instead to pay for the criminal actions of these elites, these bank investment banks and stock market and so on. Speculators and toxic loans and debt mortgages and so on. People ended up paying for that. And then, you know, you had President Obama come in during that time, obviously, to manage the bankruptcy, basically, and to take the stimulus money. And there was trillions of dollars that ended up going in. No matter who you are, black or white, Democrat or Republican, if you understand what happened during that time, this was tons of money stolen, basically, and redistributed during that time. And it wasn't redistributed downward to the poor. So, and then you had, you know, a lot of money pumped into the stock market, pumped into housing, cars, you know, industry and so on, you know, to boost the economy again, to get it back on track. Well, that was after the bankers consolidated, merged in, knocked out the little man to keep it happened. You know, so for everybody now looking and like, well, well, Trump or President Obama was able to pull us out of that. Well, yeah. But if you look at what most economists say, is a rise in the economy after a major recession like that, it recuperates. So you know, just give all credit to Obama. It's not necessarily the case. In part, it was due to the Federal Reserve, and like I said, the recession and the economy boost there. But you can give some credit to President Obama, whether you say that or not. So now you can, with the anticipation of President Trump talking about bringing jobs back, trade agreements, about getting out of TPP, about relooking at NAFTA. These things, the Democrats act like that has no impact on, act like that has nothing to do with the economy. And the only thing that made the economy great is Barack Obama. Really, if we're going to argue the whole point, then let's just say Barack Obama nor President Trump has done it. There are differences to that. And a lot of times people don't want to look at it, but the rhetoric versus what's going on is the reason that there are differences. With President Trump, a lot of what his speeches were in his election and in the during the campaign were promises to build the economy. And but since he's come to office, the steps that he's taking are direct cutting regulations, cutting a lot of funding for the UN and these areas, and then doing tax cuts. These things are what is directly, in my opinion, helping to boost the economy. Now, yes, he did come into a better economy than what President Obama came into. So you have to look at it from that perspective, too. I'm not necessarily going to aspects of Obama's economy. That's not what policies I'm not necessarily against, because I knew that he was more of a Wall Street guy, and the White Shoe Boys is Gerald Celente would say. I already knew that he was going to ingratiate Wall Street and boost the stock market artificially through, you know, pumping the stock market up with all this money and things. So a lot of people are going to say, well, Trump has a better economy. Right, that is true, but he doesn't have stimulus bills, and he doesn't have all of this $23 trillion to pump into the market either, as Obama did. So in order for President Trump to keep the economy strong and to make it grow, he actually has to do real economic policies that would stimulate that. He can't just dump tons of money in like President had the opportunity to do, even though he came into a bad economy. But so you can look at those facts. And, so last Thursday, the Department of Commerce reported a far faster pace in the third quarter than they thought it was going to, at an annualized rate of 3.5%. And it says since the Financial Times, and it says that since the 1980s, the only president to have taken office while the economy was growing at a faster rate was George H.W. Bush. And so there is a sharp contrast, Barack Obama's economy in 2009 that basically was a free-falling economy. And jobs were being lost, like 800,000. But when President Trump was on a campaign trail, you know, his campaign jargon and things was that under President Obama, it was a disaster, but it's come a long way. And so, you know, obviously, I mean, I'm a realist. I wouldn't say that all of a sudden, from day to night, night to day, all of a sudden, just because Trump came into office, you know, all of a sudden the economy just went, yay, from horrible to great. But again, you can look on both and say what part, how much of it did actually President Obama have in that stake, as opposed to what the Federal Reserve and the corporations and the market itself had. Because really, President Obama's policies were not policies that would directly affect the economy. They were more disastrous. But nevertheless, managed to get better. Now, they try to say different aspects of that, and I've looked at a lot of data and some of the rosy pictures that, and Washington Times and the New York Post and them try to paint is not as rosy as they say it is, but it's not as bad as some naysayers, I'd say, either. You know, it was kind of in between. If you look at an analysis of these metrics, you can look at the financial crisis, and then after that, you know, a building back up of a more. But in my opinion, it was due to a lot of the stimulus, a lot of that. That was the, for lack of a better term, that was the benefit that Obama had, as opposed to what Trump will have now, because he's coming in actually in a more robust economy now. But now his policies are not good, and he has a economic plan and policy overall, and you know, foreign affairs and everything else, foreign relations, then reflect in the economy itself. And he won't have a stimulus economy to just make it better. So, you know, that's the thing. Unemployment is low. The S&P is breaking records. And recently, home sales have hit their highest rate since 2007. So there are some charts from Financial Times that talks a little bit about it. And if you go back, when Jimmy Carter and George H.W. Bush were in, they had higher GDP growth rates. And if you look now, the GDP is again close to, it's at about 3%. Now, there were points in time when Jimmy Carter was in where it was pretty high. It was up probably 5%. Between the time that he came in, was pretty low amount. It fell sharply and then went back up to almost 5.5%. George H.W. Bush, pretty high GDP. He came into it, however. Ronald Reagan came into kind of a, you know, a very unstable kind of. It fell right during Jimmy Carter's term, and then Reagan picked it up, but then it fell sharply again, whereas it started to stabilize during his term, and then Bush came in, and it dropped again. Then you had Bill Clinton, who actually did pretty well with it. And then George W. Bush came in, of course, obviously, and it grew and grew and grew until the financial collapse. And then you know, then Obama came in. And if you really look at the GDP growth during that time, it remained very low during his term. That's the thing. It only started to grow of his term. So that's what I'm talking about. Financial collapse. Back in 2008, the stock market really didn't do too well. It started to regularly kind of hit hard around 2013, and then it's had a steady growth after that. But if you look at during Obama's term, the stock market, you know, it did have a boost, but you got to remember that, in my opinion, a lot to do with the stimulus. You see, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, trillions of dollars to pump into the economy that was basically robbed from us by threats of Marshall and everything else. If you go back and watch the hearings, and it was a lot of corruption. And then to fund Obamacare, President Obama took from, I think it was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Goldman Sachs or somebody, took tons of money out of them. I think it was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to stimulate Obamacare because it's a mess. And so if you're out there Obama's, you know, terms, you should at least admit that the Obamacare fiasco it's a mess. And they need to do something with that at least. That's the whole difference, in my opinion, with the economy and with the growth of the economy up to now was in a large part to that stimulus, in my opinion. So, you know, the benefit of what that Obama had, even in an economic mess, was that stimulus package, which they said was $700 billion or whatever, but it came out to be like $23 trillion. And lots of that money went overseas that nobody even knows to this day. President Trump's election, of course, the stocks have been surging even more, and that's because a lot of these investors were listening to Trump, listening to his campaign speeches, and listening to what he was promising. And two things that were really impacting that were the tax cuts and regulations. If you're going to cut the taxes and cut these regulations for businesses, they love that, and that's what they were looking at, and spurring economic growth. According to Financial Times, some of the other proposals that he has, it states could have some downsides, like imposing tariffs on Chinese and Mexican imports. You know, one of the big things that happened President Obama's term was unemployment. Unemployment during his term. But if you look during Ronald Reagan's term, when he came in, he had a pretty big recession, and then he had a bad recession and then high unemployment too. So the trend is pretty much the same there. And both of the trends with Ronald Reagan and Obama went down about the same rate. Reagan's looks like it went down a little quicker than Obama's unemployment rate. But again, now, you know, it's down at like 4.1%. One thing that I've always talked about, though, is that 4.1% or whatever, 4.6%, these rates, these are U3 reports. These are rates that the U3 report is not the full basic unemployment rate, real unemployment. You know, when Obama was in it, about like 22%, and Trump came into that too. So it's probably still at, you know, 18 or 19% real unemployment. That's the jobless rate, you know, the not in labor force. It was still high, but it is improving. It's hard to really say, you know, what that's due to. A lot of it is the new found patriotism, let's say, in America. This whole idea of nationalism versus globalism. These companies see how serious President Trump is, and I think that that's spurring them to, you know, want to build here in the United States. And then with the tax cuts, these tax cuts for corporations, cuts, that'll help too. There was one report I read that, you know, they're paying under President Obama and others, they were paying like 35% tax rate. So they were hiding a lot of overseas and actually only paying around 18%. So now if you come in as a president and say, okay, instead of paying 35%, I'm going to drop you down to 21%. This may actually do well, because then these corporations hopefully will, instead of saying put all their money overseas, will instead bring it back to the states. And then also, because they want to keep those low rates, may look that instead of trying to hide it in all these different tax loopholes and things, they may just go ahead and actually increase the amount that, because they no longer have that 35% looming over their heads. And they may invest, as reports are showing, there's tons of companies giving out to their employees and growing their companies, and also give. So that's a good thing. And so there were some similarities, like I said, you know, Ronald Reagan and Obama, because they both came into almost like similar situations. And, you know, Reagan, once he got a, you know, handle on the unemployment, then it started to drop pretty quick, and went from about 10.8% to 5.3%. From 1982 to 1980. So there are some similarities, president situation. You know, a lot of people are attacking President Obama because of that. And the labor force rate was pretty high. I mean, since he was in, it was like 94 out of work or something to that effect. A lot of people were squeezed out during the financial crisis. But, you know, it's kind of hard to tell how many people were going to enter back in. And there's a lot of statistics to these things that, you know, some people would say it was due to this or due to that. And sometimes it's hard to. Those are some things about. You know, and again, too, we're going to see what these of tariffs are going to happen to how it's going to affect the economy under President Trump, because, you know, he's promised to impose tariffs on Chinese imports and so on to drive prices up. You know, this could drive prices up, we'll say. But he seems to be, you know, doing pretty well as far as a foreign policy, as far as foreign relations with China. And, you know, we haven't had a war yet with him, thank goodness. And he's been doing pretty well holding off North Korea and doing pretty well against, even with all this fiasco with this false narrative of Trump collusion with Russia. To be too unstable, at least diplomatically. But the national debt, of course, crazy high. I mean, they're saying it's at 19, 20 trillion or whatever. It was Lawrence Kotlikoff, who did reports back in the 12, that he was saying it was like at $200 trillion. I mean, unfunded debts and all this, $1 trillion. So it's probably, who knows how much it is. You know, it's a ton. But if you go back to like 1980, let's say, the national debt was about $4 trillion under Ronald Reagan. Under to about $5 trillion. And then from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush, it hit $5 trillion, I'm sorry. So you got from, you know, the founding father, George, all the way up to the first president, George Washington, George W. Bush. U.S. national debt was only up to $5 trillion at the end of Bush's term. So he raised the national debt to $5 trillion. Of course, we had the war, you know, we had the invasion of Afghanistan, Iraq, and then financial crisis, which, you know, hit. And then Obama, when he got in, national debt was probably about $11 trillion, I think it was. So he went from $11 trillion up to $19 trillion. So he raised that national debt approximately $8 to $9 trillion in the year he was. But if you think about that, that's almost all 44, you know, or 43 presidents. I mean, that's insane. But of course, yes, we had a crisis, a financial crisis, but we had one too. And a big recession. And national debt only went from like $3 trillion under when he first came in up to about $4 trillion. So it only went up like $2 trillion. So you have to see that, you know, and I'm not going to say that debt going up obviously is not because of Obama only, because we know that the handlers above are engineered that financial crisis and then took $23 trillion. That's the thing. Now, the U.S. dollar is up. And, you know, according to a lot of economists, the U.S. dollar being up hurts a lot less. And maybe import goods. Of course, that could widen the trade deficit and so on. And, you know, President Trump has said he's going to slash the trade deficit. So it all will depend on, you know, these agreements, NAFTA, if he renegotiates NAFTA and so on. And if we get a good, strong economy. But also then you got to look at whether the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates and how fast they're going to raise them and so on, too. You know, there were reports that when Trump come in, it seems like the Federal Reserve and them were trying to do everything they can to try to make his economy look a little worse than it. You know, that's not working because the economy still looks. Hopefully it'll continue. My main thing is this. We shouldn't be wanting to. We got to be careful, and myself too. I do it. That we don't play the football game, you know, of picking the teams. And yes, I do support President Trump, but I remember, you have to remember, we all have to remember that the economy is running the show, and the presidents that get in, for the most part, are. The difference, in my opinion, on this presidency is that President Trump is not necessarily a puppet because he is going against the grain. And, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, if you are not one of these mind brainwashed liberals, left liberals, like you say, then you have to understand that if you really look at Trump, other than the nonsense propaganda that he's a racist, a misogynist, and I don't like what he says. I don't give a damn what he says. You know, as a man, he was a freaking man when he was in a locker room and he said something like, I'm going to grab a woman by her, you know, hoo-ha. And everybody's so offended by that. You know, listen, he was in a locker room with a bunch of guys and guys talk nonsense. Women talk nonsense too. It's the nature of humanity. We are sexual beings, and we are attracted to the opposite sex, and some of us are attracted to other things. But besides that, you know, you have those desires. So does that make him less of a man? Not necessarily, because he came out and he apologized for that. He said, I never done it. I would never do that, but he talked it. But anyway, that's beside the point. The point is we can't be putting our faith in the wisdom of men. But we have to put our faith in the power of Hashem, in the power of the Almighty. And caught up in these things too, in reporting these things, because we want success. I mean, when I go back and think about President Obama, when he was running, I kind of actually liked what he was promising on the campaign trail. That he was going to bring jobs back to the United States, that he was going to shut down Guantanamo Bay, that he was going to. But then he never really did that. And, you know, how much of that was only him? How much is that? And that's the thing we have to understand, is whether it was Obama or the elites or what. I think that Obama's ideology was more so to do those things, because I think he is a Marxist. He is a socialist and a colonialist, but he market. I mean, that's why he was such a good for the elites, in my opinion, and that's why he ran two terms, and that's why nothing ever happened to him, because they were guarding him and controlling him. The difference is with Trump, they can't really do that. And I know the left will say they are, and all this, that, and the other. But as far as that's concerned, because they can argue the point with the economy to some extent, you know. But, yes, the economy got better. The stock market got better under Obama. I'm not necessarily arguing that point. I'm arguing what reasons for it, you know, because we had a controlled collapse. We had a structure by the bankers, and then a pumping of the stock market. I mean, it was The stock market's up, 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 but there's no jobs. There's no options. There's volatility. It was just, I don't see how that was an organic growth. Rates were kept artificially low, way beyond what they should have been. A lot of economists were saying that they should have been, soon after the recession, they should have been doing it, and we should have taken the pain then, as the economy would have recuperated a lot quicker, and so on. But that didn't, because the criminality after the criminality of the recession, there was a lot of criminality after that with the stimulus. It was basically a robbery of the United States people by the elites, by the bankers. Then they wrote the Obamacare bill, the insurance agencies and so on. And now the Democrats won't admit to that. They won't admit that it's messy. But yet when President Trump, in the tax plan, repeal the mandatory that you have to pay for health care, or we're going to take it out of your taxes. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who don't like Trump, but I'm sure they have no problem with that. Because if they do have a problem with that, then I'll tell them, you go ahead and keep paying for, your mandatory money. Just give your tax case. Because you're not going to do that, obviously. Nobody wants to do that if they don't have to. And there's going to be a lot of people who, they don't want insurance. They're going to drop it. Bill, there was lots of people who elected not to buy insurance, and that should be their right. The government should not mandate that. A lot of judges and a lot of circuit courts and so on actually should be unconstitutional, but who cares? Nobody. Finally, something's being done, but a lot of people are looking at this and saying, that Trump should get no credit, Obama should get all the credit, and then on the other side, Obama should get no credit, Trump should get all the credit, when really it's probably a little bit of both and a whole lot of neither. It's markets, it's economies, it's banks, Federal Reserve System, central banking, corporations, these things that really affect the. There is policy, presidential policy, obviously, that will affect that too. And one thing that was concerning, is I saw that states that Trump has spent about one-third of his first year on Trump properties. But one of the big things was air travel. And it says that this is from The Week. .com, Trump's air travel alone to Mar-a-Lago cost the government $6 million this year, according to a review of Air Force records. And that doesn't include Secret Service protection or other costs related to Trump's Florida and the travel costs to Bedminster have either. So it says, according to this article, that former President 8 years of travel for himself and his family cost the government $1 million, or roughly about $1 million Judicial Watch estimates. And that's including and other expenses. But Trump's air travel to Mar-a-Lago averaged at about $1.5 million to the Journal. Travel outside of Washington is also unusual in that the Trump stays at are businesses that personally enrich him, largely from other guests paying to stay there or visit. Several of his properties sharply raised rates he's been elected. George W. Bush, says, went to his rent. It's not like you could rent the bedroom next to his. It's a spokesman for the Transparency Act. Responsibility and ethics in Washington to the Wall Street Journal. So, I mean, I have to go on vacation and I'm going to be staying 3 days at a hotel. decent hotel, I'm going to pay about $500. Plus, for that, you got to pay for parking. So, you know, $600 on a weekend, I'd probably spend maybe or less. That's a lot of. And yet you got these presidents. And in 8 years, the Obama administration spent $100 million in vacation. And I haven't even gone over all the other. This is a lot of money taxpayers are paying, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, a lot of money. And so, yes, it is concerning, and that should be looked at, and that should be addressed, and the president's expenses down. Now, the only difference, too, is that President Trump has said, look, he's donated his salary for the first year to charity. He's going to donate the second year to charity. Not going to accept his salary. It's only like $4. But, you know, people go, well, it's only $400,000. He's a. So what is $400,000? It's still $400,000 that he chose to forfeit. He's doing that. So like him or not, you could say, okay, well, now is that going to cover all this money and these expenses that he's paying? No. But Obama didn't do it either. Democrat. So, you know, I'm trying to look at these in that perspective. And you've got this whole Russian investigation. And, you know, wacky stuff. Now, if you've ever heard of Roger Stone is basically, he was a former campaign advisor for President Trump, and according to Roger Stone, he and some of President Trump's own cabinet have been discussed moved from the White House. And he, when he was on C-SPAN in an interview, he basically stated that he heard some of President Trump's administration weighing in whether they could invoke the 25th Amendment to take him out of office. And there was an Associated Press reporter, Tom LaBianco, who asked, he said, do you have any evidence that anyone is actively plotting or attempting the groundwork right now inside of the cabinet or inside of the administration to make that removal? And Roger Stone said, I have sources and I work my sources, and there are some who have had this discussion. This is both, I think it's the fallback plan for the trying to sound the clarion call, he stated. But he declined to disclose any specifics, obviously, because his sources or did state that they weren't baseless statements, that there are. And he said, like you, Tom, I cannot reveal, but it's not a conspiracy theory. There are members of the cabinet who have had this discussion, and he said, just let me leave it at that. So, you know, Roger Stone, he's been spot on a lot. I've really listened to anything that he's talked about that was ludicrous or off point. And he's about 65 years old now, but he advised during this 2016 campaign all the way up to. And now he's on radio shows a lot. He's on InfoWars a lot. But he was also an advisor to Richard Nixon. And he, back in 1980, he co-founded a lobby with Paul Manafort, who was President Trump's former campaign advisor or campaign chairman. And but he now, you know, he's been indicted due to this investigation by Mueller. And now they're trying to use him and to basically remove Trump from office. And Roger Stone, during that C-SPAN interview, said, "You're going to start seeing an enormous uptick in these irresponsible stories smearing the president as non-competentist, not up to the job, and so on, particularly if Mueller should shoot." I'm being realistic about what I believe is the resolve of many in political to remove the president under any means necessary. He says there is than just the cabinet, the 25th majority of the cabinet, and the vice president to remove the president. He says, "I don't think that is achievable today, not on the heels of the political tax cut and not on the heels of the disintegration of the Mueller investigation, but we have seen when a hysteria is whipped up among people by some in the mainstream media." He says, "I always thought that this plan B for the two-party duopoly that was has run this country into." And so I'm talking about the left-right paradigm. He's saying, you know, basically parts of the and the Democrats, the never-Trumpers and all these people. And it says the White House didn't immediately respond to a request for the president's or Mr. Roger Stone. However, it states Mr. Mueller's office, this is from the Washington Times, and at least four congressional committees are currently in the 2016 election, particularly with respect to concerning Russia's involvement in helping boost President Trump over opponent Hillary Clinton. But Russia denied it, you know, saying that they didn't. Here's what the mainstream media keeps pointing at is President Trump and Russia, but they know that possible collusion with Russia, Hillary Clinton and Ukraine, Hillary Clinton and Uranium One. So did Trump or any of they don't want you to think about. Did he, officials, with his knowledge, collude with Vladimir Putin? Doing what? Doing, you know, did they collude to John Podesta or the DNC contents that would damage Hillary Clinton? Or at the same time, elect Donald Trump? There's been an investigation going on for over a year now, and still nobody's come up with any collusion really to be found. And there's no end in sight to when this putting together. Then you can look at, let's look at the other side. The rival explanation is that from the very beginning, actually, but in during the campaign, we'll say, but then around July or so, you had Comey come out with that, you know, that whole explanation of Hillary Clinton. Basically, remember when he came out and he's like, although, you know, we have all this evidence, basically, that Hillary is guilty of sin. Say that originally, he said that she was grossly negligent. And if you go back and you watch some of the videos with Trey Gowdy and them, that was the whole question. is extremely careless and not grossly negligent. Gross negligence show the intent because they could indict her on that. And remember, he was texting his girlfriend, FBI, while they were both investigating Hillary Clinton, and yet he was calling Trump an idiot. And he detested this guy and that he shouldn't win. And emails and all these things. I mean, Comey came out and stated, yes, she sent classified emails through here and these things that she did, but we're not going to prosecute her. But if anyone else would do these same things, he says that, you know, basically, it's not to say you won't be prosecuted. How is that? And then also, Comey was drafting an exoneration statement of Hillary Clinton before the FBI had even interviewed her. And when they did, she was an oath that was, I don't know, their personal stuff, they said. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. They're allowed to do that. There's nothing nefarious going on here. And that's basically what they did. Clinton campaign, they pumped millions of dollars through law firm Perkins Coie in order to make this fake dossier. It was a mixture of a bunch of garbage, falsehood, fabrications. These elites are wanting to destroy President Trump. Why? United Nations. He's supporting Israel. You know, we knew that there was financing of Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, ISIS then came out, you know, into Iraq, many things during President Trump's time in office. Egypt was overthrown, Libya was overthrown, moderate, secular, Islamic, and so on, just organic revolutions, which were really CIA operations funding and weapons transfer and rebel jihadists to overthrow those countries and destabilize them and make them more radical. And they were trying to do that with Syria as well. And of course, they've not been able to do so. And now you've got, I mean, you think about the whole 8 years. All you people, Obama was so great, okay? Yeah. If we want to argue the economy and so on, that's one thing. But if you look at this, the whole thing, these organizations to so-called overthrow Syria and so on, but they were doing covert operations. And then as soon as Trump gets in, less than 8 months, 9 months later, ISIS is almost totally knocked out. These strongholds are almost totally broken. Bills have been passed under one of the congresswomen, stop funding of terrorists, and it wasn't Gabriel Gifford, but it was years. And it's not good. You know, that's not a good thing to be in these wars for, you know, endless amounts of time. We got to get out of some of these countries and try to be at peace with these other countries. But, you know, so far, like I said, I think he's doing a pretty good job.
We offer cocktail versions, mini uprights, full-size uprights, and our game packages come with multiple game options.
So we're back. There's one other thing before I sign off tonight, as I wanted to go over, is an interesting article. Israel minister plans Trump train station at West. That was interesting. Israel's transportation minister pushing ahead with a plan to dig a railway tunnel under Jerusalem's old city, passing near sites holy to Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and ending the Western Wall at a station named after President Donald Trump. And, of course, I mean, they're, you know, doing because they admire President Trump, especially after he decided to declare Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and that we're going to move our embassy back to, or we're going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. The Israel Katz plan, currently in the initial stage, involves constructing two underground stations and excavating over 2 miles of tunnel beneath downtown Jerusalem under the politically sensitive old city, and the project would extend Jerusalem soon to open a high-speed rail line from Tel Aviv to the Western Wall, the holiest site where Jews can pray. And it goes on, it says the route's going to run close to, but not directly under the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where tradition holds that Jesus was crucified and buried, a contested holy site known to Jews as the Temple Mount and to Muslims as the Noble Sanctuary. Previous excavations by Israel near the holy site, spiritual epicenter of Israeli-Palestinian conflict, have sparked Palestinian protest, violence, and protesting. Because of those sensitivities, the proposal will likely meet with heavy resistance from the Palestinians, neighboring Arab countries, and the international community. But the project's going to cost more than $700 million if approved, and it's going to take about 4 years to complete that. And, of course, you know, Trump, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, has pissed off the Palestinians and a lot of the Muslim world, too, and the UN General Assembly. And so they adopted a resolution last week condemning the move, and several traditional American allies breaking with Washington to vote in favor of the motion. Israel captured East Jerusalem, which includes the Old City, back in 1967 and annexed it in a move not recognized internationally. The Palestinians claim East Jerusalem as the capital of their future state, and a longstanding international consensus holds that the fate of the city should be decided, through direct Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. You know, but every time they try to do that, the Palestinians don't agree. So I don't want to blame Israel for that. Ikrema Sabri, a senior Muslim cleric in Jerusalem, denounced the planned train line extension, saying the Palestinians won't accept any change in the occupied territories. Oh, well. Fooey. He said that giving the name of Trump to this project will not give any legitimacy. It would just be another implementation of an unacceptable decision of President Trump to recognize Jerusalem. Oh, well. But gratitude for President Trump calling Jerusalem the holy city. And that's why they decided to do so. And decided to, you know, give him that honor. The train station by his name. But anyway, guys, you know, I just wanted to come on and give some news updates. A lot of other stuff in the news, obviously, but, it, you know, there's not enough time in the day to cover all that stuff, obviously. So I will, thanks.